All right, this is going to be a special episode, so stick around until the end, because I'm going to break down how the GOP is quietly trying to cut Medicaid and Medicare while distracting everybody. Then I'm going to bring in two guests, one Gen Z candidate for Congress named Deja Fox, who is killing it, and then Cameron Caskey, who works with the Bulwark, and I have two very interesting conversations that relate to Gen Z, to Medicaid, to Medicare, and to the Republican Party. So make sure you drop a like, and make sure you stick around until the end. Let's start right here. GOP Medicaid debate intensifies as Republicans search for cuts. House Republicans are under the gun to get specific on how they will offset President Trump's domestic policy agenda, and they soon need to decide if they're going to scale back Medicaid benefits, but it's not really an if. Always remember, Republicans are playing this very, very slippery game where they claim that they're not trying to cut Medicare and Medicaid, but they basically forced themselves to. So they committed to cutting $880 billion of spending over the next 10 years, and they said it has to be through the House Energy and Commerce Committee. That's important. They said we have to cut $880 billion through the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Now, that very committee oversees both Medicare and Medicaid, so when you look at the breakdown of federal spending and how it's allocated, the committee necessarily has to cut nearly all available funds for Medicaid or Medicare. It is effing insane. And let me just clarify really quickly. Republicans keep saying they're going to rule out cuts to Medicare. They're not going to cut Medicare. It's too sensitive. But it seems like Medicaid is the one that's on the chopping block. This says Medicaid is at the heart of the GOP plan to pass a, quote, big, beautiful bill and make budget space for an extension of Trump's tax cuts. By the way, extension of Trump's tax cuts mean tax cuts for the largest corporations while benefits are slashed for people in the bottom. That's the opposite of how it should be. We should have a strong social safety net at the bottom, and that allows people to have equal opportunity to then get rich and contribute. But this topic has divided members who are facing a menu of politically perilous cuts to the program that provides health coverage to more than 70 million people. Conservatives are agitating for steep cuts to Medicaid, while moderates have said they would oppose any bill that rolls back coverage and benefits for their constituents. We'll see what happens, but I want to bring in Deja Fox, who is currently running for Congress. You guys will love her. Check this out. All right. I am joined today by Deja Fox, who is currently running to represent Arizona's 7th Congressional District. How are you doing today?
I'm hanging in there. Campaigns are hard work, but good work. And we're in a special election, which means it's a super sprint to July 15th.
You have been killing it. I think everybody in the audience would agree that we need younger faces in Congress, political knife fighters, so to speak, people that will go out there and they're not afraid to punch back at the Republican parties. I want to hear a little bit, starting why, and then we'll zoom in on policy. Can you talk about how your upbringing impacted your decision to get into politics and to run?
Yeah, I mean, that is a policy discussion in and of itself. I was raised by a single mom in Section 8 housing and on SNAP benefits, food stamps, and Medicaid. I was a free lunch kid at a public school. All of that is policy. And so my life has always had a factor in which who was elected, who was in office mattered for me to just have the things I needed to survive and thrive. And when I was 15, I experienced something that actually is pretty common here in the U.S. for teens, which is hidden homelessness. I moved out of my mom's house because of her struggles with substance abuse. I lived with a boyfriend and his family. And at the very same time, my sophomore year in high school, I was being taught sex ed by the baseball coach. That was last updated in the 80s, didn't mention consent. And I started showing up to my school board meetings and demanding that they do better by me and my peers. And after 6 months of this advocacy journey, we won a rewrite of that curriculum in Southern Arizona's largest school district. And then we zoom ahead just a year to Trump administration one and his efforts to defund Planned Parenthood, where I got care with no money, no parents and no insurance. And I went toe to toe with Republicans in Arizona who were attempting to take away that funding from women like me.
That is a great story. Advocacy always starts young. Good job getting your baseball teacher's ass out of there. That's solid. Because
what he knows, winning the baseball games.
It's all too common. It's a weird conflict of interest there. But I want to ask you what tangible ways do you want to change lives in in District 7 of the constituents there?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of twofold, right? We need someone who is going to use every power in this seat. It's a safer, bluer seat in Arizona. And, you know, that means that what's up for grabs maybe isn't a majority in the House, but is the power in our party. Who are we, right? That is the question we are answering in these safer and bluer seats. And we need people who are going to fill them, who are going to push back on Republicans every single day, right? Not just vote the right way, but use parliamentary procedures to obstruct Trump and his allies from doing things like giving tax cuts to billionaires while families like mine can't even pay rent. You know, we need someone who's going to take it a step further, think long term about our restructuring of the Supreme Court, which has been stacked against us and overturned things like Roe versus Wade, right? Making women like me, our generation, the first generation to have fewer rights than our mothers. And so, you know, we need someone who's not going to just stop at checking the boxes. We need someone who's going to have a long-term view, who's going to bring an activist mindset to this seat because it is safer and it is bluer and we deserve nothing less than a fighter in it. And the last thing I'll add, and this is not exactly about policy, but it is, we are in a deficit of leadership in this party, especially when it comes to effective communication. Right. Adam, you and I have been out to Capitol Hill, done the mini mic interviews, and Democrats are struggling, if not failing, to communicate with their constituents how they are fighting on their behalf. And so we need to be filling these seats now in the special election in 2025 in Arizona and in the midterm election with effective communicators who know how to talk to real people and who know how to use new mediums like social media to do it.
Yeah, that leads me perfectly into my last question. I was going to say that Trump's approval rating is currently lower than it was at this point in his first term. But for some reason, yeah, Democrats are also historically unpopular just because our lack of communication and our lack, yeah, of relatability. So I like the relatability that you bring and how you immediately were like, well, my upbringing is policy. Everybody's upbringing is policy. I like that distinction. So I just want to ask you finally, how do you plan to effectively push back against Trump at a time when most Democrats seem to be kind of not effective?
Yeah, I mean, I think the major difference between me and the folks I'm running against in this primary, but also the folks who are currently filling these seats on Capitol Hill, is that I have an activist background, right? I know power from the other side of the dais. I know what it means to be disruptive to this administration because I did it last time around. And I think that's the kind of energy we need to be bringing to these seats. And like I said, I said this in an interview the other day, but I really do believe that it is easier to teach an activist like me House proceedings, right? Parliamentary rules, than it is to teach some of these Democrats we have met and some of the Republicans on the other side too, to have a spine, to stand up and stand 10 toes down on the issues we care about. And the last thing I'll add is that this really isn't some like political game for me. I actually just got back from my first trip to DC since starting this run. And I left with the same feelings that I left with from that joint address, a sense of disappointment and a renewed sense of why me, because this is personal to me, right? It is literally these folks standing between my mom, her neighbors, and their housing, and Donald Trump taking it away. This still very much impacts my life, the life of my family, my community members. And the last thing I'll add is that as young people, right, someone in their 20s, we bring an entirely different sense of urgency to these issues. I've heard Democrats say that, you know, let's just get through this administration. It's only a few years. But when you are someone who's struggling to pay rent this month, making hard choices in the grocery store checkout line right now, just waiting a few years isn't going to cut it.
Yep, that's why we need people fighting back now. Now, this is going to be an important question. Where can people find you? Where do you want people to go to? A website, your Instagram? Shout it out.
Come meet me on Instagram and TikTok at Deja Fox. One of the things we're really focused on throughout the course of this less than 100-day campaign is making running for office more transparent. You can see videos of me talking about everything from call time to signature gather and paperwork filing. And I promise it's not as boring as it sounds when you have an effective communicator in the seat. But yeah, follow us over at Deja Fox. And you can find us at DejaFox.com, where folks can contribute to this campaign. It's going to take all of us.
Thank you. Thank you for the time. And the website will be the first link in the description. Go check out DejaFox.com. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Adam.
I'm joined today by Cameron Caskey, host of the FY Pod with Tim Miller, which is currently focused on finding out why Gen Z dudes are moving to the right. How are you doing today, man?
I'm good. I'm still not moving to the right, despite the Democratic Party's every effort to get me to stop buying into them. I'm in this terrible relationship with them where no matter how much they upset me, I still come crawling back. But I'm all right. I have some advice for your listeners, which is get some sleep. Like, the romanticization of getting no sleep for work, bad idea. You know, there's a difference between cramming for a final and getting into a bad habit. Don't get into a bad habit.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get sleep when there's constantly leaks coming from the White House 24/7. But I do want to ask you, what have you learned from the FY Pod so far? You've had on a lot of interesting guests. Have you been able to, not even prescriptions on how to fix it, but descriptions on what the problem is? What's your description?
Totally. I would say the first thing I've learned from FY Pod is that our show is at its best when it's less Gen Z and more me and Tim just kind of arguing with each other. In the most recent weeks, we've gotten so comfortable with each other that now we're shitting on each other all the time. And that's really fun. And that's kind of when we're the most Gen Z, because when we're butting heads as like this elder millennial, former Republican gay guy with a kid, and this plucky, sprightly young Gen Zer, like that's when the actual generational tiffs start to emerge. But as for this young men turning to the right shit, I think people aren't really making friends anymore. I think people aren't thriving in romantic relationships anymore. And I think that during COVID, social media was able to turn young men to the right by getting us very upset about that. And instead of making us invest more in making friends and building community, instead of getting us to, you know, respect women and understand that you're probably not ready to date a woman if you can't just be friends with one. The social media kind of groomed us to believe that it's everybody else's fault except for ours. And that makes people angry, and anger and isolation turn people to the right.
Yeah, to build on what you're saying, I also think during COVID, a lot of people in our generation during their most formative years kind of put this bubble up around themselves. And then I remember I had to intentionally make an effort to take that bubble down and start hanging out with people as the lockdown ended. But then a lot of people didn't take the bubble down. They're still very lonely. And then you get sucked into these pipelines. Like when I go online, whenever I have friends that are into working out, they get sucked into these like MAHA pipelines. I have friends that are into health stuff. They get sucked into MAHA. If you're into any like tangential topic, you get sucked down some pipeline. Every single young male has problems with dating, right? Every single young male has problems with dating. So then you look up dating advice and you get sucked down the fucking red pill pipeline. So I feel like that's a big problem right there.
Well, I think people with progressive values are just failing to make culture content and fight the culture war that we are so desperately losing. And you see people like Brett Cooper, who is sort of like the female Ben Shapiro, not only in values, but also the way she looks.
Yeah.
She weirdly, like, I thought she was a Ben Shapiro nepotism hire of like a niece or something, but she makes this, you know, conservative trad wife content that's just MAGA enough that it's having this negative influence on young women, but it's just accessible and affable enough that you're just watching a sweet, kind, girly live her life. And whether or not she's, you know, Trojan horsing in some really negative and violent values is not of concern to the young women who watch her. And they say, well, I would love to be a financially stable woman in her, you know, late 20s who is attractive and has a husband. That sounds great. So what you see is that a lot of left-wing people are making political content, but, you know, you're not getting those progressive-minded Jim Bros. You're not getting the progressive-minded Paul brothers. And the Paul brothers, you know, they make videos fucking around and beating the shit out of Mike Tyson and stuff. And then they're like, also, you should believe that we should send immigrants to concentration camps. And we're just not engaging in the culture war. And I think a big part of it is that the Democratic, not only the party, but also the people who are influencers or voices in the party are trusting Americans to look at policy. And they're forgetting that most people just want to be given content that they want to watch. And you got to meet them where they're at.
If you enjoyed these conversations, drop some blue hearts. If you made it this far in the video, say, hi, Adam. I love each and every single one of you. The full conversation with Cameron Caskey will be available in the members-only section of my channel later tonight, so you can find it there. Love you all. See you in the next video, and peace out.